Gentlemen, the House Committee on Agriculture and Forestry is hereby called to order on this day of March 27th, 2001. We have a number of bills to hear and work through the session today, so we appreciate you all showing up, and we will try to move through these as is necessary. To begin with, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3488, and we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 3488. Don't ask me why, but we did it. Okay. Next, the chair would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2222. And Ray, I guess we have some amendments for that bill, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. You have -1 amendments, and Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we heard this bill on the 20th of February, just to remind you, and the issues discussed were Southern Oregon Goodwill, Incorporated Goodwill Services, Temporary Employment Agency, and the potential amendments. Mr. Chair, the -1 amendment is included in the -2s.
Okay.
The -2 amendment allows for the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to issue a farm labor contractor license to a private nonprofit corporation designated by the IRS under Section 501(c)(3) of the IRS Code, provided that the purpose of the corporation is to provide education and training and workers utilized in the forestation or reforestation of lands or in the production or harvesting of farm products, or for at least 5 years before the corporation files an application for a farm labor contractor license, the corporation has been authorized to do business in Oregon by the Secretary of State. They've been primarily engaged in recruiting, soliciting, supplying, or employing workers, and they have been designated exempt under Section 501(c)(3) of the IRS Code. The -2 amendment adds requirements for nonprofit corporations to submit an application for a license and maintain a corporate surety bond, a cash deposit, or the equivalent of cash in the amount of $30,000. The -2 amendments declare an emergency effective on passage. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. At this time, the chair would like to call Charles Deister and Janet Whitfield. You would both come forward. Thank you. Welcome, and for the record, please.
Chair Krupp, my name is Janet Whitfield with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. In 1999, the legislature, we passed the bill, Senate Bill 980. We intended to clarify some of the things about farm and forest labor contracting of employees. One provision, at the request of a nonprofit, we allowed them to get into the farm labor contracting, and we limited it to those who were engaged in education and training. Lo and behold, after the session, Goodwill Industries came to us and said, we'd like to do it, but we see there's a problem. So the intent of this legislation was to allow them to do that. We took away the education and training provision because they don't always do that. And we then worked out an amendment with Michael Dale of the Oregon Law Center that would make sure that it didn't open it up to too many nonprofits. He was concerned about this being abused. So we said that they had to be in business for 5 years and that they were in the practice of doing this.
Okay, Charles.
Good afternoon, Chairman. For the record, Charles Deister, representing Southern Oregon Goodwill. Just provided written testimony, which just outlines briefly sort of a recap of what we presented a month ago at the February 20th hearing, at which point we had Eric Olson from Southern Oregon Goodwill up testifying on behalf of the bill. This bill would allow us, would allow Southern Oregon Goodwill to place people from their temporary employment agency, Willpower, in agricultural and reforestation temporary employment jobs, which some people have actually, some agricultural businesses actually approached them seeking to use their employment agency, and this bill would allow them to do that.
All right. Members, do we have any questions of our two witnesses? Well, hearing none, thank you both very much. Appreciate you coming today. Okay, well, at this point, we are lacking a quorum to actually pass the bill out, so for the moment, we are going to... our quorum just showed up.
doesn't look like a
forest. The chair is going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2222 and open a work session on House Bill 2222. And the chair would entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 2 amendments.
I would move to adopt Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2222.
Okay, it has been moved that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments for House Bill 2222. Any discussion?
Just a question, Tom. Was there any opposition testimony to this bill? Was there?
No. Okay, any further discussion? Are there any objections to passing into House Bill 2222 the Dash 2 amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair would entertain a motion to pass House Bill 2222 to the full House with a due pass recommendation as amended.
So moved.
It has been moved that House Bill 2222 be passed to the full House for consideration as amended with a due pass. Any discussion?
Yes.
Certainly. Vice Chair King.
Did you adopt the Dash 1 amendment?
No, Vice Chair. The Dash 2s actually include the Dash 1s as a comprehensive.
All right.
All right. Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Doyle?
Excused.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Excused.
Representative Hoffman?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Vice Chair King?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Excused.
Chair Cook?
Aye. House Bill 2222 is hereby passed to the full House with a due pass recommendation as amended. And the chair would like a volunteer to be the carrier. Representative Tootie Smith has volunteered. Let it so be noted. We're going to close a work session on House Bill 2222. And we're going to open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3530 will be the first one. All right, Ray, would you like to share with us what House Bill 3530 is all about, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3530 creates a continuous allocation of lottery funds to the County Fair Commission for distribution to county fairs. It limits the allocation to the lesser of 1% of net proceeds from the state lottery or a specified dollar amount adjusted for changes in the consumer price index. It requires the County Fair Commission to make annual distribution each January of unexpended dollars credited to the County Fair account utilizing the merit formula currently in statute. Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Ray. The chair would like to call John McCulley from the Oregon Fairs Association. And is it Ted Sabe?
Yes, sir.
Welcome. Come forward if you would, please. Welcome to you both, and for the record, state your names.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm John McCulley, representing the Oregon Fairs Association, and I'm pleased to have with me today Ted Sabe from Sherman County, who is president of the Oregon Fairs Association.
Welcome, Ted.
We're here to testify in favor of House Bill 3530. This was introduced by Representative Butler. I'm sorry to say we didn't have a hand in getting it to you. Representative Butler took care of that. Nonetheless, we do support this measure. You may recall that it is similar to House Bill 2047, which was a bill introduced at our request that allocates a certain portion of lottery proceeds to county fairs. This was a bill that you had about a month ago in committee and approved it and sent it to the House Revenue Committee, where it had a subsequent referral from the Speaker. In that House Bill 3530 is very similar to that. We also support what it intends to do, adds stability for funding for county fairs by establishing a certain percentage of lottery proceeds that would go to fairs and caps that amount in the bill at $1.55 million per year, which is slightly more than county fairs are receiving right now from the general fund, and then indexes that amount of money. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would recommend that this bill be sent to the Ways and Means Committee so it can be evaluated alongside the other funding requests that are down there relative to county fairs. House Bill 2047 is scheduled for a work session in the Revenue Committee tomorrow afternoon, and it is the intent, I understand, of the committee to move that bill down to Ways and Means as well. So our recommendation is to have all of these bills down in Ways and Means where they can be evaluated in terms of money that is available, and just see how the budget crunchers want to proceed with these bills.
Okay. Ted, your thoughts on this bill?
I have about the same thoughts on this bill as John does. The only thing is we got two bills now in this mix, and I see no problem with that, and we just want fairs to be funded for a long period of time rather than have to come back every 2 years.
How significant of a difference is there between this bill and the previous bill that we had passed out? I'm sorry, Representative, I apologize. Yeah.
The difference is House Bill 2047 did allocate a percentage of the lottery proceeds to fairs. It then did an additional step in creating or funding a trust fund for fairs over a certain period of time, and that the end of it was an 8-year period. The plan was that there would be enough money in that trust fund that the fairs would not be coming back because they could live off the earnings of that trust fund. That's the difference in the bill. This bill does not establish that trust fund, if you will, or does not put money into that trust fund. It is just a straight dollar allocation.
Okay, so other than that, the intentions of these bills are very, very similar.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the intent is stability for the funding. They just go about it in a different way.
Representative Smith.
So I'm trying to sort out what is proper procedure for us then, since we're looking at both bills. Do we pass both these and let Ways and Means figure it out?
Yeah.
So one vote in favor would not be in conflict of a favorable vote for the other?
Not at all.
Okay, that's just, I want clarification. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions of these gentlemen? Representative King.
I do have some questions, but I do see that Representative Johnson's here, and I'd be willing to hold my questions until she had a chance to testify on the other bill.
Okay, fair enough. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. And with that, we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 3530 and open a work session on House Bill 3530. And Ray, there are no amendments, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, we are... If we're going to pass this bill out, we would recommend that it goes to Ways and Means so that it can be reconciled with the other bill and let the Ways and Means process be able to sort that out and see if there's a methodology that they can come up for melding these two bills. Representative Hobson, you have a very quizzical look on your face. Would you share with us your thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may be misunderstood. I thought Representative King had some questions on this bill and was willing to delay those until after we addressed Representative Johnson's bill. Did I misunderstand?
No.
Well, then the chair stands corrected. Thank you, Representative Hobson, for bringing that to the chair's feeble attention. And with that, we are going to recess a public hearing on House Bill 3530 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3905. Ray, would you tell us what this bill is all about?
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3905 requires audits of county fair records to include an opinion on county fair compliance with certain policies. It requires county fair boards to supply annual reports containing specified information to the County Fair Commission. It makes county fairs ineligible for distributions from the county fair account or the Oregon County Fair account for a period not to exceed 1 year if the county fair board does not submit the required reports. It provides for distributions to county fair boards from the county fair account to be equal for all counties and reduces the limit on county fair commission expenses. We have one set of amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's the dash ones, and they add the most recent business plan for the county fairgrounds to data required to be submitted by the county fair board to the fair commission.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate that. Chair, I'd like to call Representative Betsy Johnson forward at this time. Welcome, Representative. As always, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
For the record.
Get organized here for a second. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I am the state representative from House District 1, home to two county fairs, the Clatsop County Fair and the Columbia County Fair. Coming and offering any testimony raising concerns about county fairs is a little like being against motherhood, apple pie, and the flag. However, I'm here today because I do care about county fairs. I grew up in Redmond, Oregon, at the Deschutes County Fair. Friends of mine had 4-H animals. I've slept in the pen next to the sheep and the cow. I visit my own Clatsop and Columbia County Fairs, buy animals, and generally donate those back to good causes in the community. So I'm here because I care about fairs. I've spent quite a bit of time watching House Bill 2047 as it's developing. I took trips to Eugene to meet with the board of the County Fair Association. I attended their meeting in Portland, the annual association meeting, and I've made some individual visits. My concerns about the bill are in two areas. The first is the policy question, the question about whether or not it's appropriate to set aside pieces of the lottery. Is it good policy to carve off these pieces and earmark them? And is it appropriate for the state to run programs out of huge pools of money that are developed from various public sources? But the second one is what I'm going to call the accountability question. After learning more about the difficulties that some fairs were experiencing, I came to the conclusion that simply creating a fund and requiring no accountability on the part of county fairs was not acceptable. Consequently, in collaboration with representatives of the County Fair Association and with Mr. McCulley's agreement and help, I asked Legislative Council to draft an accountability bill, that's House Bill 3905, that I hope will be considered in the context of the other bills that you're looking at. My accountability bill would require fairs to make standardized reports to a county fair commission in the areas of environmental concerns, a business plan that would include how fairs propose to do maintenance and asset utilization, also the use of funds, including how they allocate reasonable administrative costs, and a demonstration of compliance with state and federal contracting rules. If the legislature considers giving county fairs public money, I think it's reasonable, in fact necessary, that the public know how their money's being spent and have the expectation that fairs are being operated utilizing the best business practices that will eventually lead them to some kind of financial sustainability. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Representative. I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
You're reducing the limit on the county fair commission expenses. Why and how come there was a limit, first of all? And John, you may want to perhaps come forward and address that issue also.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm John McCulley, Oregon Fairs Association. The County Fair Commission was created in 1971 for the very reasons that Representative Johnson has brought this bill to you, to provide some accountability for the money that fairs were receiving from racing revenues. The County Fair Commission, as it existed until 1993, was a group of seven people who divided up all 36 county fairs and went to visit and evaluate every county fair in the state. And they would spend usually 2 to 3 days at every county fair with a score sheet. They would provide a rating for every fair in the state, fairly substantial investment of time and energy to do that. The bill, when the racing revenues for county fairs went away in 1993, there was nothing else for the County Fair Commission to do, because their job was to take those racing revenues and determine how best they should be allocated based on this rating system that they had put together. In 1993, the money was just allocated to each county fair on an equal basis, so there was really nothing for the County Fair Commission to do. This contemplates bringing the County Fair Commission back on a somewhat limited basis, in that they would be the repository, the receiver of information to make sure that the monies that are being allocated to fairs are being used as they are intended, and also to receive information from the county fairs as to how they are meeting their missions within their individual counties. As a result, the County Fair Commission really does not need as much money as they did when they were spending 3.5 days at every, or 2 days at every county fair in the state, and performing some very significant evaluations of the fairs. As a result, it's our feeling that they don't need the $40,000 per year that was allocated previously.
All right. Well, that sort of answers my question. Representative King, I know you have a burning question to ask.
Representative Johnson, I see that you're looking for an annual audit. Are you looking for a, and it also looks like a pretty comprehensive, you know, annual audit, not just money, but you know, looking at pretty extensive practices, pretty extensive, you know, process. I'm wondering if, you know, if the risk justifies that expense. I certainly concur that we want to have auditing review, but I'm wondering if annual and that extensive is a best investment versus, you know, maybe you know, periodic full and interim, you know, less full.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, I have left the development of the form to the commission. This is developed for fairs by fair people, so I hope that they would not put an onerous standard on it. I do, however, think that the reports ought to be on a consistent format, and I think they ought to speak to a variety of areas. The reporting could actually be quite simple, I would presume. But what I learned in the time that I spent talking to members of the boards of the county fairs and talking to Mr. McCulley is that right now the reports come in a variety of formats. Some don't come in at all. Some of them are done in such a way that there's so much fluff, based on the ones that I looked at, that it's very difficult to sort out what the answer is. And I shouldn't use fluff in a pejorative sense, but there's so much detail extolling the virtue of the fair that it's very difficult to pull out the answer. And so I am proposing a form developed for fairs by fair people that wouldn't be onerous, but would speak to, it could even be a checklist of just, is your business plan attached? Give us your attendance counts. I don't see this as being an onerous reporting requirement at all.
Certainly.
And I do think that, you know, in some degree of frequency, whether it's biannual or every 4 years, some reasonable period, that there be a pretty extensive audit. But it's also sounding like in your statement that, you know, what may be, you know, needed, you know, on an annual basis is a systematic, you know, review process that lends itself towards an audit, so that problems can be detected and we might not need to establish full audit every year.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, I'm quite amenable to that. In some conversations with local government, given that the relationship between county fair boards and local government has not always been characterized with harmony and a complete meeting of the minds, there might be some things that would bring a level of comfort to local government. For example, an annual checklist indicating liability insurance acceptable to local government, if local government is in any way in the chain of responsibility. I'm quite amenable to making sure that this is not burdensome on fairs, and if there's a more extensive audit required on not an annual basis, I'd be fine with that. But I think some kind of annual reporting in terms of attendance, in terms of compliance with public meetings for the fair boards, a record of compliance with the state and local contracting laws, and compliance with the existence of liability insurance satisfactory to the local government certainly wouldn't be a burdensome requirement.
Members, Representative Hobson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if Representative Johnson or John is the appropriate person. If my understanding is correct, there was $40,000 given to the Fair Commission for administrative expenses in the past. What has that been used for that might be not available? What activities might not be available if they weren't to have that money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, the $40,000 has not been allocated to the County Fair Commission since 1993, because they were taking that money out of the racing revenues and setting aside $40,000 for their operations, and the rest was distributed to the county fair, so they have not been receiving that. What they would not be doing under this new plan that's before you is they would not be visiting every fair, and of course that's where the travel expense was. There was a $30 per day per diem for seven people, so it was a fairly extensive and expensive operation. Under this program, they would not have those travel expenses. They would merely have expenses of collecting data and storing data.
Certainly.
Follow up, if I might. Is there a need for that type of visitation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, there are mixed feelings in our organization about that. Some, even when the County Fair Commission was operating, were concerned that there was micromanagement going on from this group that was coming around. Some to this day still invite former County Fair Commission members to come to their fair. Tillamook is an example. Every year, one of the members of the former members of the County Fair Commission comes to the Tillamook County Fair and does an evaluation for the Board of Directors. And the Fair Board pays that, and there's some volunteer time that the County Fair Commissioner gives. So different fairs have approached it different ways.
Vice Chair.
Yes, thank you very much. Representative Johnson and
John McCauley.
So, John, is it okay to call you John?
Very fine, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to tell you how important I think this is. You know, for, gosh, I can't remember how long, 20 years, I have lived across the street from the most successful fair promoters for rodeos, the Cockerham family in McMinnville, from Cheyenne to you name it, to Colorado, different locations, Albuquerque. And, you know, I think that if you call them today in Dallas, and their son now who's taken over the vast majority of all of these concessions, and they would tell you that it's absolute that you have these annual audits, I mean, of your programs and your business plans. And, I mean, if you want to be successful, you know, you plan your work and work your plan. So I just want to commend you for what you're doing. I wish you'd extend it one step further and include the state. And I think we could solve a lot of our problems there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, if I could respond to that. I have just spent 2 hours this afternoon looking at the state fair budget, and I think Mr. McCauley heard some messages that he will be taking back to the County Fair Association. I think fairs are beloved institutions in our state, and anybody in this room or on the panel could make a good argument for why they're important. But my view is that it's simply not good enough to say we're doing it for the kids.
No.
And not have any accountability built in. The state fair is suffering from deferred maintenance, and the buildings are in some cases in deplorable condition. That same set of circumstances exists at some county fairs. There are instances where county fair boards have been self-perpetuating and have not complied with state budget rules, have not had open meetings. And simply because the end product of the fair is so valuable to generations of future farm kids and 4-H kids, I don't think that it's appropriate that we abrogate our responsibility to make sure that fairs continue by insisting on best business practices at fairs. So that's the point of the bill that I'm offering, is to simply say we've got to run these like businesses, recognizing that many fairs are never going to be self-sustaining and that they're going to need help from local government. But fairs ought to demonstrate on the record to the best of their ability that they're trying to maximize their revenues, reduce their expenses, and operate within the law.
Absolutely. Follow up.
Certainly.
I'm sure also that Representative Johnson and John, Mr. McCauley, that you've taken into consideration the uniqueness of each area. I mean, no two plans are going to be alike.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I've heard that message loud and clear from directors of fairs, as well as from Ms. McCauley from the Fair Association. That conversation certainly occurred at the Economic Development and Transportation Subcommittee of Ways and Means, where we heard from a parade of witnesses that a fair in far eastern Oregon is not the Multnomah County Fair.
Or Yamhill County.
Or Yamhill County. And so I hope that the reporting requirements that we have built in here, and this is with acknowledgement to Representative King's concerns, are not onerous on the little fairs, show that they are equitable in the reporting, don't put undue burdens on fairs that struggle already, but yet bring to the public and bring to local government a level of satisfaction that best business practices are being employed and that people and the fairs are not at risk from deferred maintenance or abrogated liability.
Okay. Members, do we have additional questions? Representative King.
On line 24, to the County Fair Commission on a form, and it's really sounding like you want to have, consistent data that, is easily integratable, and I'm thinking that that might actually be a website, type of a response. And so I'm thinking that rather than requiring a form, which I perceive as a bunch of paper, to be in a format, which would allow either electronic reporting or paper traditional reporting.
Mr. Chair, Representative King, I'm perfectly agreeable to that. The fairs enter the 22nd century.
In that regard, then, does this bill give us the latitude to accomplish that? As I read it, it does, but I mean, you tell me.
Yes.
From your perspective.
Fortuitously, our legislative council has arrived. You can probably answer that with accuracy.
The chair would like to recognize legislative council in the form of Greg Chamoff.
The answer is, oh, sure, Mr. Chair.
All right.
The chair accepts an oh, sure answer. Thank you. All right. So
we just defined electronic reports as forms.
Yes.
Okay. Acceptable.
Okay. All right. John, do you have additional testimony?
I would like to.
You would? Okay.
Mr.
Representative Johnson, you're welcome to stay if you'd like.
Delighted to stay.
Okay. The chair would like to call John McCauley and Ted Sabe again, if you'd like to come forward again, Ted.
Mr. Chair, I'll just be very brief in commenting on the bill. John McCauley, Oregon Fairs Association again. We do support House Bill 3905. We think it makes good sense to have what we see codified, what we're already doing to a very large degree. County fairs are a part of county government. As such, they go through the budget process just like every county agency does. They are audited just like every county agency is audited now. They must comply with the public purchasing laws. They are a unit of local government. I agree with Representative Johnson that in some cases rules have probably been bent, but at the same time, by and large, the county fairs do operate as units of local government and must comply with the open meetings laws, all of the other laws that are required of those units of government. So I'm in essence saying that I think there is accountability in the system now, but it can be improved, and I think House Bill 3905 is the right way to go. One of the reasons that we can wholeheartedly support it is that we are doing so many of these things right now. One of the concerns has been raised in a different forum in the Ways and Means Subcommittee by one of the members of that subcommittee who was concerned about the small fairs being able to comply with some of these requirements, much like Representative King was commenting. And we see one of the roles for our association is to help those people do that. You will see one part of the requirements here is participation in professional development activities on page 1, line 15. We think that's a very critical part, not only for the compliance with what is required under this law, but to enhance the delivery of the services that a county fair does deliver. And we want that to be
something that really emphasizes to county fairs they need to improve what they're doing now. And we think that's an important part of the bill. The amendment that is being offered was an oversight on our part in the original drafting of the bill. It was to have included a business plan to be presented as a part of this overall process, and we, again, wholeheartedly support the Dash One amendment and think it should be included as a part of the bill. County fairs do report to our organization right now. This is kind of a continuation of the County Fair Commission, and Representative Johnson is indeed right. It's like pulling teeth to get some of those reports in. We think we have developed a standard format within our organization. We have a committee that's been working on it for many years to provide this data in our form, but the County Fair Commission faced the same thing that we're facing. There is inconsistency. People count attendance in different ways. They account interim activities in different ways, and we do need to improve the way we develop the data. There's no question about that. So to the extent this bill helps all of that, I think the entire system of county fairs in the state is going to be benefited, and we can support 3905 because it's going to lead to that end, I believe.
All right. Ted, your thoughts?
I'm going to go along with everything John said. Just about everything.
Okay, could you speak into the mic and again state for your for the record your name, Ted?
I'm Ted Sabe. I'm from Sherman County. I'm president of Oregon Fairs Association. I go along with what John has said fully, and I commend Ms. Jack Johnson for her ability to put this all together for us. She came to the meeting over when we had it at the shoots, and after that, well, we got to thinking about it, and we got with her quite often and talk about it to build this bill. And I really think that it will help the fairs to be accountable for the way that we will get data so the governments can look at it. And like John said, we do already have a lot of a form that we send in every year, but it is hard, like he said, to get every fair to comply with it. And I do think that this bill that Betsy has got, if I may say so, I think it's a great bill, and I stand behind it 100%.
Okay, thank you. Members, we'll have Vice Chair Nelson and then Representative Smith.
Oh, do we say Sabe?
Sabe.
Sabe, I'm sorry, thank you. Mr. Sabe, thank you for all you do. And I know you got a good administrator over there working with you.
Yes.
Could you supply us with a calendar?
Pardon?
With the calendar of the county fairs.
She wants to go to all of them.
I'm going to do what y'all talked about last time, okay? That's my goal.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, we will soon be making a distribution of our annual date.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chair, appreciate you. Just make sure you have enough copies for everyone.
Yes, please.
Yeah. All right. Tootie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of this bill and the other one, too. I just have a little question here. So what if our county fairs do not comply with this requirement?
There's a hammer,
Mr. Is there
Chair.
A hammer? Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, there's a hammer.
And what is that?
Originally, the hammer was a big hammer, and it got made a littler hammer. Originally, when Mr. McCullough and I talked about this bill, I wanted one non-compliant fair to cut off funding to all fairs.
Mm.
That seemed a little draconian. I looked at it as an opportunity for peer review and peer encouragement. However, Mr. McCauley felt that that was a little draconian, and so we stepped down from that. At this point, failure to report by a fair results in a one-year suspension of the allocation to that fair and has no deleterious effect on the other.
Well, I think that's probably, unfortunately, going to be necessary because I can just imagine, coming from where I come from, these well-meaning individuals who subscribe to different set of procedures and morals that the rest of us subscribe to, they say, I want to blow you guys off and say, we don't need this. We're doing fine out here. And unfortunately, this may create a little acrimony in the beginning with them not wanting to comply, but I think it's a direction that we need to take.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, there are 41,000 reasons that they should comply.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, and as I understand, in our county, one of our commissioners is assigned that responsibility of the county fair, and we're fortunate in our case that it is the legislator I replaced, Representative Leslie Lewis. So I hope that for Representative Smith's fair and everybody else's, that you're fortunate to have somebody that believes it when they hear that somebody says there's a cutoff. And I hope that $41,000 is shared among the rest of us if you don't show Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I would assume that Commissioner Lewis's report will be the first we receive.
Most likely.
I shall challenge her.
Vice Chair King.
Are we saying that the county fairs get $41,000, you know, from this account, so it's anticipated?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, that is the historical amount. The last two biennia general fund allocation of just over $3 million per biennium has gone to the county fairs, which comes out to about $41,800 per year per fair. And so that is the amount of money we're talking about in the past. Now, with this cauldron that we're building here, putting different bills with different amounts and different ideas, I'm not sure what that might be in the future.
Understood. I still have a bit of a concern in terms of whether we're generating a report, performing a review, or doing an audit. I put audit at a higher review posture than the other pieces, but it sounds like we are doing more of reporting and reviewing than we're actually doing auditing. But if you get $41,000 for doing it and it costs you something for doing it, you might have a net, $30,000 gain. We might be, resulting in a net effect of, a $30,000 gain by a fair if it costs them $10,000 to do it, other than the fact that they're running a good business and hopefully they'll find, good savings and good business practices that will generate more than the amount. What are we perceiving that, a county fair might be expending in accomplishing, this report, this audit?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, I would anticipate that it would not be a large expenditure at all. These are activities that most of the fairs already do. Most fairs have already adopted, if you just look under what would be included in this audit, and I agree with you that we may need to refine that a little bit, but most fairs already have developed an animal welfare policy on how animals will be treated at the fair, both during like a rodeo and during the exhibition of animals. They not all of them have developed environmental plans yet, but they are in the process of doing that based on water quality issues and waste disposal issues that are confronting every fair in the state. They are doing those things now, and we are getting help from the Oregon Department of Agriculture with their confined animal feeding people. Most fairs now participate in the professional development activities that we conduct as an association, either our annual convention or our management conference that we have coming up in May. They have to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act, and many of them are using grants that are available to upgrade their facilities, so they do comply. So I think these are ongoing processes that every fair undertakes right now. So I really don't anticipate that it's going to be a huge burden on them to do.
And if a county fair reported in their Disabilities Act, for example, that they're not in compliance, but they reported, they still receive their allocation?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, as I read the language, yes, they would.
However, Mr.
Please.
Chair, Mr. King, you also have added perhaps a new food for thought. Depending on what the commission might want to do in developing this form, that if failure to comply with the Americans with Disability Act appeared repeatedly, that would certainly be a topic of interest to local government. While I don't envision building any remedial activity into this bill at this juncture, that certainly would be an important aspect for the commission to take into consideration, how long you would tolerate an out-of-compliance situation.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair.
Yes, Representative Johnson, I'm thinking that the liability rests with the county.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, in most cases, yes.
Okay. Hey, members, do we have additional questions?
Just one quick question, and I'm deciding whether I really want to ask this, but I must. In compliance with liability measures, now our fairgrounds are aging all across the state, and we have not been able to make adequate repairs. I'm concerned, you know, during a high attendance event, grandstand seating, for instance, at the rodeo, if some catastrophic event happens, how are our county fairs going to be in compliance to upgrade their facilities or whatever when there's no money to do it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I would submit to you that a grandstand collapsing and all of the lawsuits in the absence of insurance would be equally catastrophic. A risk management person at some point in time may have to make the tough decision that a grandstand is no longer habitable by humans. But I simply don't think that it's acceptable, an acceptable risk for local government to go without insurance. And most of the local government folks that I chatted with understand that there is a burden to the fairs, but to operate absent insurance is not acceptable.
No, I would agree with that. I think they should have liability insurance. However, liability insurance, you know, does not save lives. It covers costs. And I'm just concerned about the other aspects, since we've heard testimony on the state fairgrounds, the racing facility, as you know, okay. All of our fairs are at that level at some place or another, all of the fairgrounds. So that may not be an issue for this committee to discuss, but it's just a comment.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, Representative Johnson is right. I mean, there could be a local building official, fire marshal, whatever, who will say that you cannot use those buildings. And that has to be part. One of the reasons we have a business plan in here is to start addressing some of those issues. Fairs are undergoing those evaluations all of the time, so I think that's handled. Last session, this legislature did pass, or the legislature passed a bill that made some significant changes in the county fair statutes. Number one, allowing the county commissioners to fire the members of the county commissioners to fire the members of the fair board. There was question on whether that could happen. That was accomplished last session, so that gives them more control over the people they're appointing to the fair board. Secondly, was the requirement that if the county so desires, the county fair board must sit down with them and discuss risk management issues, how they're going to handle liability issues. And I think that's happening in virtually all the counties now. So there are mechanisms in place to allow these things to happen.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Vice Chair Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. McCauley. Do we have this commission in place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the simple answer to that is no.
And may I ask a follow-up, please?
Certainly.
When will you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, if this bill passes, then there would be one in place. The when 1993, when all of the funding for fairs from racing went away, the County Fair Commission was disbanded. As a matter of fact, I believe all of the rules related to the County Fair Commission and the Oregon Department of Agriculture were rescinded. So I don't think there are even administrative rules that exist anymore relative to the County Fair Commission. So it would have to be reconstituted if 3905 were to pass, and the County Fair Commission once again had something to do.
Mr. Chair, follow up. My concern is funding. For that commission, if we're, I was assuming it was just inactive because we haven't been doing diddly. I don't mean, you know, we talked about this before. I didn't mean that rudely. So I'm concerned about the reestablishment of it and the cost thereof that we need to ask Representative Johnson to do something about quickly.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, there is an amount of money in the bill that speaks to the activities of the County Fair Commission.
But the, excuse me, Mr. Chair, but the representation, who it will consist of, et cetera.
Oh, okay. We
talked about a regional concept to be sure that the rural wasn't thrown in with Portland, heaven forbid, or Salem, or what's the other big place in Oregon. We want to be part of the
county,
we want to be part of the pork and pig whatever. We want to have our fair that same day.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, the existing statutes spell out the membership of the commission. Those are still in place. That
okay,
talk
so
about the 7-member commission, where they come from.
Okay.
So that
and
is
we agree with this, so Mr. Chair. We agree with it. We don't have to review it. We agree with it, Mr. Sabe?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Members, do we have any additional questions? Hearing none, we thank you all very much and close a public hearing on House Bill 3905. And the chair would like to reopen, or I should say reconvene, a public hearing on House Bill 3530. And if they're hearing no additional questions, Representative King, are you satisfied with House Bill 3530, which we heard previous to this?
I did have a question. I have to remember what it is.
Okay. If you could take a moment and review that. I'd like to hear that. And that is the chair's intention to move both of these bills forward. It's also the chair's intention that both of these bills go to or actually pass to the Ways and Means Committee so that we can meld them all. Ways and Means can hear all these bills at the same time and make the proper decisions regarding that. Representative King?
Yes, I don't see a fiscal.
John, would you like to come forward? On which bill? Representative 3530 or 3905?
I'm looking at 3530.
Okay.
I assume that, fiscal is resolved the Ways and Means, of course, but I don't see any report here, and I'm not sure to what degree we need to deal with that. I would, if we had a fiscal concern, I would hate to have a Ways and Means Committee, think that we processed that with diligence and then when we actually didn't.
Well, the preliminary SMFS says that it may have a fiscal impact, but no statement has yet been issued. My guess would be that sending it to Ways and Means would be probably the most appropriate place for that to wait for that statement to be issued. Let your concern, however, be noted that we would be passing this out with no real understanding if there is a fiscal impact on it.
Right.
For the record.
And also, in the testament on the last bill, it was said that the county fairs are a part of local government. My memory about Coos County Fair is that they're a private corporation. I assume they're still in that manner. Are they now a government agency?
Mr. Chair, if I'm...
Certainly. Go ahead.
Representative King, Coos County is no longer a private organization. They have been subsumed within the Coos County.
Okay. So they don't need any special...
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Somebody needs to help me. How many counties are there, Mr. McCauley?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, there are 36 counties.
That's 36 counties times $40,000? Is that what we're talking about, or approximately?
On Representative Nelson, Mr. Chair, the House Bill 3530 speaks specifically to a dollar amount. If you look at line 13 on the first page, it caps the total amount that would go to the fairs at $1.55 million per year or $3.1 million for the biennium. So that's the, I guess, if you will, the fiscal impact of that measure.
And that is, the chair would like to note that figure is also adjusted annually based on the consumer price index, as it states there.
So, Mr. Chair,
yes.
And Mr. McCauley, and so this doesn't, but this is the allocation to the county fairs, the 43 to 44,000 times the 36. This does not include the cost of the commission. So we have to go then back to the other bill to get the cost for the commission. I'm assuming. The way we read it, the 40,000 on page
Page 2, line 24, says the state treasurer shall credit $40,000 of the amount appropriated to the county fair account for the biennium to the county fair commission subaccount. So I'm assuming, Mr. McCauley, that that would be from the general fund, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, as I would read the bills together, the monies that would come from House Bill 3530, maximum of $1.55 million per year, out of that amount would be subtracted the amount to run the county fair commission, because it says that the money comes from the county fair account. The money in House Bill 3530 goes into the county fair account.
Okay.
So I believe that's how the money would come. So it would be $1.55 million less $40,000.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, members, we are, if there are no further discussions on House Bill 3530 in public hearing, hearing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3530, even open a work session on House Bill 3530. And let's see, we do not have any amendments on 3530, correct, Ray?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the Chair would entertain a motion to send, pass House Bill 3530 to the Ways and Means with a due pass. It has been so moved. Any discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll, please? Excuse me. Hold on. We have a discussion from Vice Chair King.
I'm going to be voting in favor, but I would want to point out that with the other bill we discussed, 3905, it's possible that, you know, assuming that bill would pass, that a county fair might fail their audit, might not receive their funding, and therefore, you know, some of that money may not be appropriate. It would be my understanding that that money would remain in the county fair board, and that, you know, that money would take into account adjustment probably at the next, you know, biennium.
It says here that the money that's forfeited will be then redistributed among the other county fairs.
In 3905?
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Okay, I didn't catch that. Thank you.
It's on the very bottom of the page.
Right.
Right.
All right. There's a little incentive in there.
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I resolved that question in the head.
Can somebody explain to me the difference between West Side Lottery bonds and General Lottery bonds? We're talking about, is there any difference, or why do we call one of them West Side Lottery bonds? Make me crazy. Are there two different types of lottery bonds?
Well, I would say that Vice Chair, your observation powers are very astute. There obviously are. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone in this room at this point can actually answer your question for you.
And does it matter?
That's what I'm concerned
about. I'm not sure that it does, to be honest with you, but I have every confidence, and I mean this sincerely, that Ways and Means will be able to ferret that out. Let, however, for the record, that question be noted, and let us ask that question to the Ways and Means, what difference does the delineation between West Side Lottery bonds make in this overall policy decision?
Thank you.
And have them address that issue.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, it has been moved that we send House or pass out with a due pass recommendation, House Bill 3530, to the Ways and Means Committee. Any further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Doyle?
Excused.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Excused.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Vice Chair King?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Crook?
Aye. House Bill 3530 is hereby subsequently referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Work session is closed on House Bill 3530, and the Chair will open a work session on House Bill 3905. Ray, we have Dash 1 amendments. Again, would you explain to us what the Dash 1 amendments do on 3905?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The Dash 1 amendments add the most recent business plan for the county fairgrounds to data required to be submitted by the county fair board to the county fair commission.
Okay, thank you, Ray. The Chair would entertain a motion to add into House Bill 3905 the Dash 1 amendments.
Mr. Chair, I so do.
All right, it has been moved that we adopt the -1 amendments for House Bill 3905. Any discussion, members? Hearing none, is there any objection? Hearing none, -1 amendments are hereby adopted, House Bill 3905. The chair to entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair.
Okay. I move House Bill 3905 with the amendment.
As amended.
As amended to the House floor with the to the Ways and Means.
Ways and Means.
With a recommended do pass recommendation.
Very good. It has been so moved. Any discussion, members? Representative King, yes.
Yes, I did point out that maybe audit is a overly strong word for the process. I think that should, you know, that concern should not, you know, delay the bill. I think that gives plenty of time for food for thought for the sponsor of the bill and for the fair boards to see if they need any clarification in terms of when they need, you know, audits and, you know, to what degree reports or reviews, you know, are appropriate so they don't end up with overly, you know, expensive or burdensome requirements.
Thank you, Vice Chair King. Let it so be noted for the record. Any further discussion? Hearing none, would the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Doyle.
Excuse.
Representative Beecher.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith.
Oh, yes. Aye.
Thank you.
Representative Ackerman.
Excused.
Representative Hobson.
Aye.
Representative Nolan.
Aye.
Vice Chair King.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3905 is hereby subsequently referred to Ways and Means as amended with a due pass recommendation. We're going to close a work session on House Bill 3905, and members, I want to thank you for your diligence here today. We are finished for the day, with the exception of anything that Vice Chair Nelson would like to say.
Thank you very much. Because of our vast previous hearing in the committee that I come straight from, I was unable to be here to vote for House Bill 2222, and I'd very much request an opportunity to vote on that bill, please.
Certainly. Members, the chair would like to would entertain a motion to suspend the rules to allow Vice Chair Nelson to vote on House Bill 2222. It has been moved. We suspend the rules to allow Vice Chair Nelson to vote on House Bill 2222. Any discussion?
We really had great testimony on that bill.
Good. Well, I'm sorry I missed it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, is there any objection to suspending the rules? All right, hearing none, do we need to reopen it? Okay. Vice Chair Nelson, how do you vote on House Bill 2222?
I vote yes.
Okay, let it so be noted.
Yes.
Vice Chair Nelson has voted yes on House Bill 2222.
And may I ask what the vote said was? Thank you.
Okay, members, a quick reminder, Thursday, we are beginning the meeting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, okay? And members, remember, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday, and we will go to probably 6 o'clock. It is a very long day, so I want to give you plenty of heads up. If you have conflicts with that, just see me, and that's fine. The first part of the meeting is about an hour and a half, is an informational hearing on the Klamath Water Project circumstance that is occurring in terms of the potential shutoff of water to a bunch of farmers. To let you know that the Senate, our counterparts in the Senate will be joining us for the first hour and a half. This will be a joint hearing, and we probably will have additional members of the Senate besides the committees and perhaps the House here. We probably will have a full room and a full dais, and that's why we're starting at 3 o'clock. After the informational hearing is finished at 4:30, then we will be saying goodbye to our friends on the Senate side. We will be reconvening as a House committee, and we will be moving out several other bills. So it's a long day. We have a lot of work in front of us in terms of bills that have been assigned to our committee. So I appreciate your diligence. I hope that you enjoyed last Thursday off. We're going to make up for it with this Thursday. And with that, we are adjourned. Members, thank you very much.